Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. There is arguably no more important front at the moment, certainly no more illuminating front, than the continent of Europe. What is happening there with respect to the struggle between the free world and the forces determined to destroy it is palpable for those with the will, the vision, and the courage to look at it squarely and help the rest of us understand what is going on. One such individual, I'm very pleased to say, is Dr. Giulio Meotti. He is the cultural editor for an Italian daily newspaper based in Rome, Il Foglio. He also writes for the indispensable Gatestone Institute and is a weekly columnist for Arutz Sheva in Israel. He has contributed mightily with his writings through such publications as the Wall Street Journal, Commentary, National Review, Fox News, Front Page, the Jerusalem Post, and more. He is also the author of several important books, A New Shoah, The Untold Story of Israel's Victims of Terrorism, a tale of the Second Intifada against Israel, and a newer book, as of yet only available in Italian, The End of Europe, but we hope to see it in English very soon. Dr. Meotti, thank you very much for joining us and for giving so generously of your time. We'll have a full hour with you, I'm delighted to say, to talk about what's happening in Europe and what it means for us. Welcome back, sir. Good to have you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Frank.
There's so much to talk about and so many different aspects of it that you've covered so well, but I thought I might start with some of your analyses of what's going on in France at the moment. You described the phenomenon as a decomposing civilization. What is causing this decomposition? And talk a little bit about symptoms of the disorder.
Yesterday, there was the second anniversary of the 13 November major terror attacks committed by the Islamic State in Paris. And the French President Emmanuel Macron and the mayor of Paris, Anne Hidalgo, and the former president, François Hollande, were in this park releasing the balloons to the sky. And I think that image is a very plastic manifestation of the current chaos and weakness in France.
A lot of hot air, you might say, but not much substance?
You know, it's rhetorical, it's sentimental, it's funny. It's after 2 years, there's been a funny response to the most important jihadist attack on Europe's soil since the 9/11. 130 people were butchered by the Islamic State commando that night. And since then, I think France is frailing from inside. Ivan Krastev, who is a very brilliant chairman of the Center for Liberal Strategies in Sofia in Bulgaria, recently explained to Le Figaro, the French daily newspaper, that the migrant crisis has been the 9/11 of the European Union. France has been the major ground zero of this crisis. In the last 2 years, the French authorities made very important achievements in their war against the jihadist cells. They foiled 32 terror attacks. They sites about 600 firearms. They searched about 5,000 people and they arrested 800 individuals connected to the jihadist hemisphere, you know, in Al-Qaeda, ISIS. But from the cultural and religious and social point of view, I think we are witnesses the agony of France, as a famous book in the 40s by Chavez Nogales was titled, during the falling of Paris under the Nazis' march. You understand from many aspects. First of all, the French authorities are now monitoring about 15,000 French Islamists. It's a huge army, more than the Swedish army. We are talking about a community of Salafists, of radical Muslims who are ready to take the weapons against their own state. About 20,000 Jews left France in the last couple of years since the attacks on Charlie Hebdo and the kosher supermarket in Paris. The safety of ordinary French people is under attack. You know, two girls were slaughtered in Marseille last month by an Islamist who passed through Italy and went there to strike. And no French terrorists lost the citizenship who went to fight in Syria. The magazine Charlie Hebdo, who is a major protagonist of this season, is now receiving this week new death threats because a cartoon on Tariq Ramadan, a famous so-called moderate Muslim, who is accused of sexual assault. No major French publication expressed solidarity with Charlie Hebdo by reprinting Islamic cartoons, which should have been the, you know, brave and most significant response to their carnage.
Let me ask you, Dr. Mayotte, you've described very ominous trends in France. To what extent are these trends a function of what has happened with respect to demographic changes in that country, specifically the introduction of large numbers of immigrants, many of them, as you've pointed out, from northern or other parts of Africa, as well as the Middle East?
This summer, French President Macron ended up in the middle of political storm with accusation of racism and xenophobia for saying that women with 7 or 8 children are responsible for the current condition of the African continent, creating, according to Macron, a civilizational challenge. Now, the problem is that this kind of challenge is taking place inside France. The French economist Charles Gave recently predicted that France will have a Muslim majority by the middle of the century, in an estimate that doesn't take into consideration the number of expected new migrants. So according to the current demographic situation inside the country, they might have a Muslim majority by the middle of the century. What will happen then? We don't know. Eric Zemmour, who is a very important French author, he wrote the book The Suicide of France, wrote that when there would be 20 million Muslims in France, we might accept the Ataturk model of a kind of dictatorship to protect the separation of church and state, the freedom of expression, freedom of conscience, you know, the pillars of the Western culture, who are now under threat in France. You know, we had cartoonists who were killed, Jews who were attacked, the same joie de vivre symbols, restaurants, the theaters, the boulevard were under attack. So France now is the major point of this, you know, Islamist storm in the middle of Europe, I think.
Well, I want to talk a great deal more about this phenomenon, and to make sure that I'm clear about what the prognosis is here, you've indicated that some are speculating that at a Muslim population of about 20%, there might be a pushback by the rest of the society establishing essentially protection for the culture of the French Republic. The population, as I understand it, of Muslims in France today is 12%. So it's closing fast on that 20% mark. And When we come back, Dr. Meyare, I want to find out if there's any evidence that this kind of course correction is actually now in prospect. We'll be right back with more in this very special edition of Secure Freedom Radio with Dr. Giulio Meotti, the Gatestone Institute, and Il Foglio in Rome. Right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back for the second installment of our conversation with Giulio Meotti. Dr. Meotti is an author, a columnist, a cultural editor for Il Foglio. He is one of the most astute and, it must be said, courageous chroniclers of what is happening in Europe, whence he hails from Rome. He is a PhD in philosophy from the University of Florence and an extraordinarily articulate as well as thoughtful analyst of the challenge of our times. Not just in Europe, but for the free world more generally. Dr. Meotti, we were talking before the break about the implications of immigration for France, and I figure at least as much for some of the other countries in which a million or more immigrants have been deposited in the past year or two. But staying with France for a moment, is there evidence that there is a popular sentiment for a course correction with respect to immigration specifically into France, but also more generally, the kind of direction the country is taking in eliminating its traditional and cultural, historical, and religious civilization?
I think one of the major positive signs of France is the number, paradoxically, is the number of writers, journalists, and intellectuals who were put on trial for their ideas and articles and books about Islam. There are dozens, Pascal Bruckner, Eric Zemmour, Rioful from Le Figaro, the same Oriana Fallaci, the Italian writer who passed away 10 years ago, was on trial in Paris. Michel Houellebecq, the author of Submission, the novel about the Muslim taking over in France. Because if you take, for example, Germany, even the UK, you don't find the same intellectual discussion about what is going on.
The more people are being prosecuted for speaking about what's happening to France, the better in terms of the signs that there may actually be hope for the place. Compared to other places in Europe, there are relatively fewer prosecutions. But there is some happening elsewhere. But tease that out for us, if you would, Dr. Meotti.
Another major sign, I think, is the number of bishops or representatives of the culture of the Catholic Church who denounce what is going on. A major example is the Archbishop of Strasbourg, Luc Ravel, who was appointed by Pope Francis last February, who is not a right-wing or conservative or any kind of coming from the right part of the church, but from the left. He said that Muslims believers know very well that their fertility is such today that they call it the great replacement. They tell you in a very calm, positive way, one day all this will be ours. This is what the Archbishop of Strasbourg said. And it means there is in France the understanding of the major historical challenge the radical Islam, but in general Islam, is taking to the French society, I think. So I think there are very positive signs. There is also a very important Jewish community, the most important and large in Europe, who is now suffering from major attacks, daily attacks. They call it the banalization of anti-Semitism. People who are attacking the streets, at home, at the synagogue. And so there is several important subjects who are now colluding to the fact that the France is the point to be understood, to understand what Europe will inherit our children and grandchildren, I think.
Dr. Meoti, let me ask you on this question of the Great Replacement. We keep bumping up against this question of immigration. There seems to be a phenomenon practiced by the Sharia supremacists, is the way I think of them, that has a kind of demographic jihad component to it. And whether that means the sheer numbers of immigrants coming in from countries where Sharia supremacism is the norm, or whether it means that you have high fertility rates, as you mentioned, or whether it means that you have polygamy, whereby you have not only high fertility rates, but multiple wives with a given man. It does seem as though the hijra, as it were, is very much underway in Europe. And this is in the absence of a course correction, both with respect to, you know, stopping more immigration and dealing with the reality of this this surging population birth rate and so on, that not just France, but other countries of Europe are essentially doomed. Do you see the pushback that is beginning to develop addressing that point at the moment?
I think we have to take in consideration two major numbers about this subject. The first one is when Germany opened the doors to over 1 million people from the Middle East, especially Syria, supporters of open borders repeatedly said that 1 million migrants are nothing in a population of 500 people, you know. And that, however, is the wrong comparison, I think. The right comparison is between the recent arrivals and the new inner birth of the continent. In 2015 and 2016, 5 million children were born in Europe. In the same period, according to a Pew Research Center report, which is a very mainstream institution, approximately 2.5 million migrants reached Europe. So migrants contributed to half of the growth, demographic growth, in just a couple of years. That's very important to understand. The other number is that according to the United Nations, during the next 30 years, the population of Africa is expected to increase by 1 billion. So if Europe is going to control the border, it might try to manage the internal demographic explosion. But if the open borders ideology will go on, it will collapse. It's simply the African demographic is already begun pressuring on the old continent. You see everywhere. In Italy, we had 500,000 arrivals in a couple of years. In Sweden, the population has grown by 2%. In France, there is this demographic explosion. So Europe needs to control the border, to close the border, and then trying to manage what happened in the last 30, 40 years with the internal demographic growth. This is what I think.
Do you see any sign, Giulio, of the Europeans actually beginning to come to grips with particularly that internal demographic phenomenon, to say nothing of, sealing their borders?
I think there is a very positive sign in the way, taking consideration what happened in Austria with Sebastian Kurz, who won the premiership, or the recent elections everywhere. Till 10, 15 years ago, all the major European countries, from Italy to Germany to France to UK to Spain, were governed by center-leftist coalitions. The left governed everywhere. Now the left is leading just in Italy, I think, and another major country, I think, is Sweden. But everywhere you have right-wing conservative coalition government.
Okay, now hold that thought, because we're going to need to come back and discuss that phenomenon and where it leads Europe in the days ahead. Giulio Miotti is our guest. We are speaking with him about the changes taking place in Europe and what they portend for us. That and more discussed straight ahead.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We are now halfway through our conversation with Dr. Giulio Miotti, the cultural editor for the Italian daily newspaper Il Foglio. He is also the author of numerous extraordinarily important pieces for the Gatestone Institute. I strongly commend its reports, particularly of what is happening to Western civilization in Europe, to all of you. Also, he is a columnist for Arutz Sheva and the author of several really important books, A New Shoah, The Untold Story of Israel's Victims of Terrorism, and a book awaiting translation, I'm sorry to say, but now out in Italian, The End of Europe. And that is very much on our mind at the moment. Dr. Miotti, you were talking a bit about this emergence in Europe, in country after country, of a new right-wing political movement. I did want to ask you to sort of drill down on the character and direction of these parties on the right now emerging in country after country, as I say. They're often reviled, not just on your side of the pond, but ours as well, as, xenophobes and Islamophobes and nativists and even neo-Nazis. Calibrate, if you would, for us, the kind of people that are now emerging as expressions of popular sentiment about what's happening to their culture and civilization in Europe.
One of the major strategic decisions the mainstream media, the European officials made, was to throw the responsibility of the destabilization of the continent to the so-called populist and nationalist parties and governments. While, in fact, these governments were totally new in Europe, if you take in consideration the so-called Visegrad group in the eastern part, the Brexit in the UK, the right wing in Norway, even the in Austria, the recent election of Sebastian Kurz. The multiculturalism is leading to the partition, to the separation, to the splintering of the European societies. The European Union official statistics recently said that in 2016, a total of 142 foiled on completely attacks were reported by 8 EU member states. So it's a major mortal threat to Europe, what happened in the last 2 years. All of Europe's biggest cities have now separated enclaves where Islamic apartheid now really and freely proliferates.
Would you agree to the use of the term no-go zones?
No-go zones, perfect definition. The former Archbishop of Canterbury, who is the head of the Church of England, Lord Carey of Clifton, said that multiculturalism is leading to honor killings, I'm quoting now, honor killings, female genital circumcision, establishment of Sharia law of inner city pockets throughout the UK. But it's a European phenomenon. Muslim women lost many rights they should have had in Europe, according to the Enlightenment and the Western values. We had polygamy, female genital mutilation. We have about 500,000 cases across Europe, according to many scholars. The legalization of parallel Sharia society in the UK with the Sharia courts, which are based on the rejection of Western values, above all, equality and freedom. You have anti-Semitism everywhere. You have the it's the attacks and intimidation of freedom of expression.
Let me ask you, Giulio, would you define multiculturalism or perhaps give us the definition as it is now practiced in the EU, the European Union, and other capitals in Europe?
Multiculturalism is a typical British phenomenon. It took place in the UK. It was created and thought in the UK and in the Netherlands. And it is based on the idea that cultural differences and religious differences must be protected inside the democracy, even if it means that radical Islam can be exported from Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and the Middle East inside the very European democracy. And there is another major school of thought, which is assimilation. It's a typical French phenomenon, which is based on the idea that we must assimilate this Muslim community to our way of life, giving them secularism, equality, freedom, fraternity, but it also failed. So many of these countries tries different recipes to integrate these communities, but most of them failed for different reasons.
And that would be why? Is it a failure on the part of the French to be willing to actually allow assimilation? Is that why these ghettos have sprung up? Or does it happen that in France, and for that matter, as you say, in Britain and Germany and the Netherlands and elsewhere, Italy, that you're seeing a refusal to assimilate and an exploitation of this multiculturalism by what are fundamentally Sharia supremacists?
I think the major responsible is cultural relativism. You know, it's the idea that all cultures are equal and that we must give a kind of corridor to the minorities inside our own democracies. And we must accept medieval, habits. And take what happened when the Ataturk abolished the caliphate in Turkey. Their veils and beards meant something, you know. Dressing has always symbolized the loyalty to a lifestyle, a civilization. When Ataturk decided to abolish the caliphate, he forbade beards for men and veils for women. Today, a kind of paradoxical cultural leftism, has no trouble with the burqas and burkinis in the beaches, but is obsessed with the transgender toilets. So it's a schizophrenia.
That's such an important insight, Giulio, and it always strikes me as this the fundamental conceit of those who engage in this practice you call cultural relativism or multiculturalism. They don't actually feel that all cultures are equal. They feel that ours is inferior to some, like this Sharia program, which is almost unbelievable. I have the feeling that, you know, people looking at this objectively from outer space or a future century will look back in just complete bemusement as to what on earth is going on here, especially since what's the clear effect of this is so heinous for so many people, a Muslim as well as non-Muslim. Very quickly, Giulio, would you just talk about the rewriting of the history of Europe as it sort of manifests this diminishing of our own culture and civilization?
Last May, the European Union officially opened the so-called History Museum. It's a house in Brussels where the Parliament and the Commission are based. And it should, celebrate the history of the European Union from the 50s during the Cold War till now. And there is not one single mention of the contribution of the Judeo-Christian civilization to the creation of the European Union, despite the fact that the very same flag of the European Union, the blue one with the yellow stars, has been inspired by Christianity, by the Virgin Mary. The official European history now is totally devoted to the elimination of any kind of reference to the Judeo-Christianity. And while at the same time, last summer, they opened a new museum in Brussels, where there is an event called Islam is Part of Our History. So while they are killing Christianity by many sentences, by many events, by many declarations, the very fact that the European Constitution dilated any kind of reference to Christianity, and late Pope John Paul II attacked the Constitution. At the same time, they celebrate another religion who made lots of troubles in European history in the last centuries.
We have to pause one more time. We'll be right back with our final segment with Dr. Giulio Meotti of Il Foglio, talking about Turkey and what it means for Europe, right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back for the final installment of this very special conversation with one of Europe's leading journalists and observers and analysts of what is taking place on that continent, in Britain, and what most especially it might mean for the rest of Western civilization, including our own country. Dr. Giulio Meotti is our guest. He writes for Il Foglio. He is also a contributor to the Gatestone Institute and a columnist for Arutz Sheva. Dr. Foglio, you were describing the transformation of Europe in the previous segments in very dramatic terms. You've alluded several times in the course of your comments to what the Turkish ruler Ataturk tried to do to essentially de-Islamicize, eliminate Sharia supremacism in his own country after World War I. A practice that was enshrined in its constitution and largely practiced until Recep Tayyip Erdogan emerged on the scene and has now, after successive elections in Turkey, taken full control of the country and seems hell-bent to turn it into an Islamic republic, I guess you might call it, or as he would prefer, a caliphate. Talk, if you would, a little bit about what you're watching transpire in Turkey and how it bears on the challenges that you've described a moment in previous conversation about what's going on elsewhere in Europe.
Mr. Erdogan has a very clear strategy, which is the re-Islamization of his own country by declaring the war on the two pillars of the secular Turkish state, which is the army and the judicial power. The veils and the Islamic topics and Islamic symbols are proliferating in the university, at schools, in the very curricula of the Turkish students. At the same time, Erdogan has been strengthened in his strategy during the migration crisis. That's very important because Europe thought that Turkey could have been the hope coming from the Islamic world, you know, the so-called Islamic democracy, the moderate one, the bridge from Europe to the Middle East. And there was a discussion about including Turkey inside the European Union. Now, Mr. Erdogan is blackmailing these European countries, especially Germany, with Angela Merkel, by threatening that if billions of euros and certain political concessions are not given to him, he will open again the borders to millions of migrants flooding into Europe as it happened 2 years ago. So, in the meanwhile, Erdogan has not only demanded that Europe jail writers and journalists and Europe says nothing, he has also tried to influence very clearly elections in the Netherlands and Germany by appealing to the Turkish constituency there. So we are now talking a lot about the Russian interferences in the European elections, why we are, you know, trying to suppressing the fact that Erdogan is really influencing the election in Europe, because there are millions of Muslim Turks, especially in Germany and in the Netherlands, who are, you know, listening to what he's saying.
This is chilling, as it has the capacity at any moment to unleash still more migrants if it chooses to do so, as you know. Also, as you've indicated, Giulio Meotti, because there are large populations of Turks to exercise real influence in what seems to be quite a seditious way to Islamize Europe as well. It's chilling to the point that we're watching this play out. And you've mentioned that Erdogan is reaching into Europe and demanding the prosecution of individuals for saying things against him or otherwise offending Muslims. It brings us back to sort of one of, I think, the central questions of our time. We're seeing a lot of this here now, by the way, but it's even more advanced there, where, as you say, people are being prosecuted by their governments and various human rights commissions and the like for free expression that offends Muslims. This sounds like Sharia blasphemy restrictions being imposed. Just quickly, if you would, Giulio, talk about that. You said it was actually encouraging in France where more people were being prosecuted. But work through with us where this is leading. Is it ultimately going to snuff freedom?
It's a very important question. I will answer by giving to your listeners a very chilling description of a video. It was filmed inside the Charlie Hebdo newsroom during the days of the 2006, when there was the Danish cartoons affair. There was a discussion inside the Charlie Hebdo in Paris if publishing or not these cartoons. And the editor, Philippe Ball, at that time, who was not killed in the massacre in 2015, had a discussion with a journalist. And one of them, Volinsky, who was a cartoonist at Charlie Hebdo, who was killed by the Islamists, said, listen, guys, France is different from Cuba and the Soviet Union because here people are free to draw whatever they want, to read whatever they want, and write whatever they want without fearing to being prosecuted or killed or arrested as it happened in Cuba and in Soviet Union under the communist rulers. Then they was butchered for their decision of drawing the cartoons. Now I think we are getting closer, not to the Islamist dictatorship, but to the society of fear that Europe defeated during the Cold War. Beyond the Iron Curtain, writers, journalists, and intellectuals were put in jail because of what they wrote and the books they published. So I think we are getting closer to that society, not because of a decision of the government, but because of the intimidation is circulating in these societies, I think.
It is indeed. And the question is it too late for Europe? Have we reached and passed the tipping point, either in terms of the demographics or in terms of the will to resist, or even for that matter, the capacity to resist? As you know, Giulio, there's a very active debate in our country about gun control, and gun control has been practiced in Europe. Has it left the Europeans particularly vulnerable to this kind of takeover and restricted their ability to do anything about it?
It's practiced except for the terrorists. Everybody knows that if is an Islamist cell can go to the Balkans where there was a civil war, like the Charlie Hebdo and the 13 November attackers, they can go there, buy the weapons, and get back through the Schengen agreement to the open borders agreement and striking. So gun control is practiced only for the ordinary innocent people, but not for the terrorists. Everybody knows where the guns are and the weapons can be taken.
It's an observation that is very prominent in our debates about gun control here as well. I have to leave it at that, Giulio Meotti. There is so much more to talk about. I can't tell you how much I appreciate your time today, and I hope you'll allow us to impose upon you for further conversations about all of this in the future, because truly Europe is the canary in the mineshaft for America. And if we allow it to take place here as well, truly Western civilization is lost. Thank you for the great work you're doing, Giulio, at Il Foglio, and also in the important output of the Gatestone Institute. I commend to all of you the books of Giulio Meotti, including A New Shoah, and not least, The End of Europe. Giulio, thank you. Come back to us again soon. I hope the rest of you will do the same again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.